Today, the editor-in-chief of Stack Favorite Apartamento tells us about the title's forthcoming projects. Then we head to India with a new issue of Lodestar's anthology as our guide. And our old friend Jeremy Leslie from Mag Culture is here to review a selection of new magazines, including a beautiful one dedicated to the world of dance. Best foot forward then, today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack. 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Coming up on the show, I'll be speaking to Monocle 24 regular Liz Schaefer, editor of travel publication Lodestar's anthology, on the latest issue dedicated to India. And Jeremy from Mag Culture is here too to tell us what we should be reading this summer. But first, a magazine that's been illuminating the newsstands for over a decade now. It's the already iconic title Apartamento. Not wanting to rest on its laurels, the magazine started a new project, Books, featuring a specific piece of work by a renowned architect. The first issue of the series is out now, The Walker House by architect R.M. Schindler. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Apartamento's editor-in-chief, Marco Velardi.
First of all, I think that for us it's really important to say that we've been doing the magazine for 10 years, now almost 11, and we realized that we wanted to have new outputs and new outlets to publish ideas and eventually sometime even dig deeper in certain subjects. So I think that the first book in this series of homes by architects and a bit of an exploration of a typical Apartamento theme, but in a way more focused on architecture, was an organic step for us to move on. The first book happened a bit by chance when we were trying to look at a certain topic and like architecture and homes. And we stumbled upon Andrew Romano with his house, the Walker House, which was built by Schindler. And so it was a sort of, again, one of those sort of lucky moments where we realized, okay, we had the perfect connection and a perfect way to start the series. And that gave us also a much stronger line for what we wanted to do. I guess the first book is out now and been out for a bit. And then the next one will hopefully be out early fall. We're trying to keep up with it, to print books. It's not as easy as making a magazine in that way.
Well, and I have to say, of course, it's still very much the Apartamento brand, but there's a few differences here. On the cover, it's a book, of course, and there's a lovely tone of purple and blue. I don't know how to describe, but it's a wonderful design as well.
I think it's about exploring a bit, what we built as a brand in terms of Apartamento, the magazine, and, the collaborations we did in the past. And also tried not to do the usual. I mean, the format is the same as Apartamento as well. So we wanted that to keep the continuity, but also try new, more bold approaches sometimes. So the colors and the font are different, and they're trying to create a vibe of his own. At the same time, they're still very much intrinsically Apartamento. So it's a very natural step for us. And hopefully we'll bring more books that are not just about architecture, but eventually more into other topics that we're trying to dig deeper.
Another thing I was going to say, Apartamento is such a strong brand that, of course, you guys have a fantastic magazine, but it became almost like more than that. We see the guests here, they talk about Apartamento all the time, that has been an influence in what they do. So perhaps that's why you guys want to branch out to books and events and other things, right?
In a way, yes. Everything, it's very much about, I think Monocle is a very fine example how things happen with an idea and purpose, but also organically, when they're ready to happen. And I think that's also a bit for us. We felt we were ready for books. We did a few things in the past, but they were not really structured as strongly as this series. It's a pleasure to hear that people talk about Apartamento. I mean, we're humble and still, for us it's like a hobby, but we're glad that it became an influence for other people to make magazines and publications.
And we should also mention that the latest issue, issue 21, is in the newsstands now as well. Yeah. And it's a massive tome. It does have the same pages as the September issue of Vogue.
Well, I mean, I guess we do the magazine only twice a year, so we have to try. We're growing steadily. I think it's been quite a nice way of growing for us since issue one. So, yeah, I mean, it's always a challenge, because, adding more pages doesn't necessarily make it easier for us because of distribution, weight, and so many other things. Also, people like to have a consistency in their spines, I guess. They don't want too many issues they're changing. So you can't change too much.
And Marco, perhaps, after 21 issues, I always ask, to our guest about their business model. To be fair, I mean, you must have something to teach us as well. After 21 issues, and it seems that you guys are doing very well. Do you have any tips, or how does it work, your business model? Is it still, you know, subscription or newsstand sales?
For us, it's really about a mix. I mean, any kind of happened very organically. We didn't really plan strategically whether we wanted to be more subscription or more direct sales, newsstands. But I think that definitely, I think that one of the major things which I find important is really the distribution. I mean, you can have the best product you want, but if you don't focus your energy and money on distribution and the right mix of how you sell it, you will not definitely able to succeed. And I think it's much easier today because you can reach out to a lot of shops and people. But still, I think it's good to find the balance between major distribution and some direct. So my tip to new publishers, don't just focus only on the content, which is important, but really also on the distribution, because it will eventually pay back over time.
And of course, Mark, we're approaching the end of the summer. I'm very sad to say this. Well, not quite there yet. I'm exaggerating. Yeah. What are you working at the moment? You told me that there will be a new book in the early fall. I presume you're working the new issue of the magazine as well?
Yeah. We have the new issue coming out beginning of November, which is issue 22. And then the new book is definitely coming, which hopefully will be before that. And then we also have every year, we've been doing a cookbook, which is a charity project we started a couple of years ago. And it's a place where we combine, like, normally around a dozen chefs, which are not necessarily chefs, can be, you know, people that love food and cook, or where we ask to share a recipe around a topic. And again, this is the same format as Apartamento. It's a small hardback. We try to keep it consistent to what we do. We also have our 10 years anniversary book coming out in mid-October, which is not published by us, but it's published by another bigger publisher. We tried the big coffee table format to see if Apartamento could stand it, and also almost as a bit of a take on the classic interior. It's called The World of Apartamento. You understand the joke there?
Yeah.
We think it's really putting together all the world that we have created and the worlds we put together, and I think it will be quite a pleasurable book for the readers and for the fans of the magazine.
And Marco, finally, as a fan of the magazine, I've been always curious. Of course, you feature amazing characters in the magazine. What's the process like to choose those people? Is it quite organic, or do you have a list of, like, we must have those people and we must try them?
We have a few people that we wish were in the magazine, like David Hockney, and we never managed to get there yet. I mean, even though we have tried a few times. But there are also, like, many other ways where things happen and get suggested to us from a network of contributors and people that we find along the way. So I think that the major driver is curiosity. I mean, we're really curious about how people live, but also how people have lived and their stories, you know, and I think that's what combines it. Even if it's somebody who's like 90 years old or somebody who's like 25, I think it's always the same curiosity drives us to discover how they live and who they are and what they do.
I have to say here, in the latest issue, I'm addicted to that house from architect Juan Green as well. What a beautiful space, huh?
I stumbled upon his work thanks to a book, and then I realized that it was, like, you know, something that I wanted to know more. And then one thing leads the other, and then that was a really lucky possibility to interview him and feature him, because that's sort of the things that we always strive for, trying to find the unexpected gem and not the usual New York apartment or, you know, metropolitan situation. But that's also our mix. I mean, we're always able to find this kind of odd, different and slightly more dreamy place. And I think that's what Apartamento stands for. It's not just one thing or the other. It's a mix of everything.
That was Marco Velardi from Apartamento talking to our own Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Now we welcome back to our studios here at Midori House, Liz Schaefer, editor of the beautiful Lodestars Anthology, a magazine that dedicates a whole issue, thrice yearly, to one country. For the latest, they've chosen India. So how do they manage to condense the enormity of all this extraordinary country has to offer into just 164 pages? Well, Liz is here to tell me more. Liz, welcome back to The Stack. Always good to have you with us, and always good to read and talk about Lodestars Anthology, one of our favourites, of course. And India is the destination for the most recent edition. Often I would say, why did you decide to choose there? But it's kind of an easy question to answer because it's such a fantastic country. My question really is, how did you ever boil down this extraordinary country to, I'm not quite sure how many pages you've got. It's a lot, but it was surely never going to be enough.
In retrospect, who knows anymore? It was a really tough one because it was the first one where we thought maybe we'd have to play with the structure a bit. Maybe we'd have to do two magazines. Maybe we'd have to pick one state. What we do at Loads does is we give a taste. We cannot cover everything. There is so much, and especially in India. So it's just diving into the country, seeing some of the stuff that's there, tempting people to book that plane ticket.
And I think one of the things which we've talked about before, I think, in terms of certainly the photographic curation and printing indeed, is how it takes you there. And there's pictures of that sort of sun bleach, that washed out quality of Rajasthan, for example, that having been fortunate to go there, really just captures it perfectly. Is it the kind of thing, though, where, and you work with some very talented people, do they just always manage to deliver what your imagination is dreaming up?
Basically, when we commission, we give people as much room as possible to move, especially photographers. I mean, we find the people we want to work with, they'll approach us, we'll find them on Instagram, we'll find them in galleries, and you're really drawn to what they do and their passion for their subject. And I think the best thing when you find people like that is to be like, here's eight pages, go mad. Could be maddening for some who's like, please just tell me what you want. But it's, I think when you find someone who has that drive and has that wanderlust in them, the best thing to do is to give them space. And a lot of these people are either based in India, have been to India multiple times, they know the country, they know what they're looking out for. And they have a beautiful archive, and it's about, you know, for them being as honest as they can and having photos that are very true and reflective.
Well, I was going to ask you about that as well, which is the balance of that writerly or photographer's eye, which is new to its subject matter, as against that which is very seasoned. So someone who spent maybe their whole life documenting India or a particular state or a particular city. Is that a consideration about whether you get a fresh view? Because sometimes that perspective, whilst it may only be scratching the surface in some ways, can strike an unprecedented sort of image or capture a note that maybe a seasoned veteran might have become slightly blind to almost.
Well, I think with India in particular, it was important to get the mixed voices, the people who understood the nuances, who were calm, they lived in it, and somebody who was going there for the first time, because India is one of those places where it is everything at once. You are so completely engaged with what is going on, and there is so much going on, and you are so in the moment, and it, you know, you beg at times just for a moment of peace, and then you go away, and because it was so much and so different and so exciting and brilliant, it seems like it never happened. People ask me if I went to India and I was there for, you know, 5 weeks, and it's like, oh, yeah, I did. Because it's so far removed from the everyday life that you live somewhere like London.
Let's take a bit of a step back. We're up to 10, which I can almost hardly believe in terms of Losa's anthology. And that, I don't know, when was your actual origin date?
September 2014, 4 years ago now.
Wow. So, you know, that feels like not a very long time and an incredibly long time, which it probably does.
It feels like a confusing time.
How would you say your approach, if indeed it has shifted, or your vision for what Lodestars is has changed? Is it constantly evolving?
I'd like to think the core vision stayed the same, that you know, initial idea was the right idea we had. I think we have grown hugely in the contributors that we work with, and with the support we get from, you know, countries on the ground, different tour operators, hotels, restaurants, people who are willing to talk to us. I think the core of it was always this sort of love of travel, this love of telling story and the idea of slow travel. So that hasn't changed, but our ability to have access has. And I think with every issue, it does take on a life of its own. I think when I talked about France, I mentioned that we ended up having this sort of beautiful green thing that wasn't what I expected. I expected cheese and small villages. With India, it is so photo heavy compared to other issues because that was just right. That's how you tell the Indian story. So I think the core is where it's at, but a bit of movement's always fun.
Well, no, and that prompts me to ask about the way, actually, that some of your subject matters are shifting, even as you plan your issues. So coming to England, am I right in saying?
Yes.
Next. Now, that's a very interesting time for a number of reasons that we don't need to go into in terms of backdrop, but you have a country that is maybe questioning its own sense of self in a way that it hasn't for several generations at least. Does that change your approach? Or is that when you say, hey, this is a great time to do this, precisely because that throws up all new challenges?
It's funny. It's something I almost didn't think when we made the decision to do it. So basically, we're going back to England because our very first issue was England. And we were small then. We were sort of learning on the job. So it's lovely to go back and do it now with the knowledge and contributors and the audience that we have. I was never really thinking about what the country needed, how we'd reflect the country, how the current climate would shape the magazine until we'd commissioned it. And not to give too much away, it's a different magazine again. And it's basically, I've accidentally realized I haven't included a single city story. Everything is about the land and the country and the history. That is beautiful and amazing and unique, and always will be that way. And I think no matter how turbulent something is, you do have to focus on the positive, because sometimes it's all you can do.
Well, no, and it's funny, I've spoken to a number of our friends on this programme, and indeed across actually all of Monocle 24's output, about what the role of good media people, creative minds should be, especially during turbulent times. Do you start to pose those questions to yourself, or do you just sort of say, hey, hang on a minute, I'm not trying to cure the world's ills here, I'm running a publication and I just need to keep my sights set on that? Or do you think it's good to maybe try and think in those loftier, maybe even rather idealistic terms?
These are the thoughts I have like three wines into like a night out with my contributors.
This is when a lot of the best ideas come up, I always think, no?
I don't think there's anything wrong with seeking out the positive. I think you have to be aware of the complexities of what is going on in your chosen country, in the world, in how people might see it, in what are sensitive topics. But I think there's value and merit in the beauty, and it is good to share those stories. And you know, a lot of the people, no matter how turbulent a country may seem, a lot of the people living there are living lives that are far removed from those complexities. They are focusing on small businesses. They are carrying on sort of family tradition. They are so dedicated to their craft. And I do think it's important to share those stories because they get lost.
Absolutely. Remind us a bit about the sort of anatomy of the sort of Lodestar's anthology year, if you will, in terms of when you turn your attentions to the next issue, the issue beyond. How does that work? And again, is that a process which changes, or does the fundamental structure and the chronology kind of almost by definition have to stay broadly the same from one year to another?
We've kept the pace constant. I think when in the early days, the first sort of four issues, we really did focus on one issue at a time, and it was given a solid 6 months. Now it's changed quite dramatically because we're trying to get sort of seasonal stories, we're trying to work with people that we want to work with based on their time scales. So at the moment we are working on four issues. We are promoting India, we are finishing England, we have fully commissioned Portugal, and now we're starting to plan Switzerland. So it gets a bit chaotic, but it's exciting. It's exciting to work with these people. It's exciting to tell stories. So you are driven by that.
What else is involved? I just wonder, I mean, do you still have the time to, you mentioned travelling to India for 5 weeks, which is obviously incredible, even if you're swamped with work during that time. Do you find you're getting enough time to find things to inspire you still, whether it's another magazine you find here or in your travels, or just to go somewhere that you haven't been before? Or, I mean, you know, we know here what the schedule can be like. It's quite taxing. Do you still have enough moments to yourself to think about some of those big questions?
I do. I'm very selfish in that I always sort of pick what stories I get to do first, and they tend to be the ones that are sort of out in the wild, like climbing a mountain, spending time on a farm, you know, just a road trip for 2 weeks. Because I think when you are shaping the magazine, even though I'm only sort of completing two or three stories now, you need to understand the country in order to get those image selections right, to make the right editing choices. And because I've picked those nature stories, it does give you time to think. That's what I've always felt with travel. It's when you're up a mountain, when you're on a river, that's when you can really process what you've seen and what you want to see. So yeah, I do have the best job in the world. I do complain sometimes just to make it seem like it's hard work, but it's not. It's glorious.
Thanks for coming in, as always.
Thank you.
And finally on the programme, another familiar voice to Stack listeners. Jeremy Leslie from Mag Culture's here to tell us about his favourite titles for the summer. And while he's at it, to preview his own ModMag conference, which will be held later this year right here in London. Fernando talked to him about what we should expect.
We are mid-planning for the London edition of ModMag after we did the New York edition in May, and then since then we had a slightly quieter time, tried to calm down after all the buzz of that, but we are quietly behind the scenes planning for London's ModMag, which takes place on the 1st of November.
Before we talk about some of the guests, tell us a bit more about the experience in New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, what did it mean for your brand?
Well, it was a gamble and a risk, but I don't think it could have gone better. It was a really powerful, kind of invigorating experience in terms of backing up our belief that there is an interest and a feeling of love for the culture of magazines in that other huge city. New York is, I've always loved the city. It's very difficult not to love it. I love visiting, but it was a pleasure to be there and actually run a conference and see. Of course, there's a lot of mainstream. The big publishers are all based there. There are a lot of independents, and somehow it's all quite fragmented. So I think we played a small role in bringing people together, and I hope that's something we can continue in the future. So we're looking to do ModMag there next May again.
Amazing. And well, and talking about bringing people together, I know you revealed some of the names from ModMag here in London.
Yeah.
And I do love the mix. Quite a few first-timers as well, even for you.
Everything that we do kind of reinvigorates the next stage, and New York definitely kind of introduced us to some new people, some of whom in some way or another are kind of linked to what we're doing this time. We're still planning. We've announced four names. I'm excited to welcome Emmett Smith, the creative director of National Geographic. I think they've been doing really interesting things this year in terms of reinvesting in print. They sort of got diverted into digital, and they've got a very powerful offering there, of course, with their imagery and the photography of nature and the planet. But they've invested a lot in their print edition, and I'm interested to hear about that redesign. And then there's a couple of indies. We've got Carol from The Plant. She did a great talk with us at the shop recently, and that's been around quite a few years now and has really established itself as one of the maybe quieter but very popular indies. And I'm really looking forward to hearing a bit more in depth from her. And then we've got Dan from Mundial.
Mundial is such a fun magazine, for non-football fans.
Absolutely, you know, it's always interesting meeting these people. They're, they are the personification of their magazine. And I think Dan and his team are real football fans, but they're enthusiasts. And that comes across in whatever they're talking about. And I think they do the same with their magazine project and everything they do in relation to that. And then the other name on the list currently is from Elle, the UK edition of Elle, and that's Thomas Meredith, who's the creative director there. And he's been doing great things there over the last couple of years and got acknowledged with a PPA award this year as best designer. So very much looking forward to him. And we've got some other stuff that I can't reveal, but if you keep an eye on Mag Culture over the next few weeks, I mean, there's some very interesting things coming up.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the shop. And I'm very curious about, this summer, what have people been buying? Were there any surprise hits at the shop? Or is there any different from what people read in winter, perhaps?
What you've said there is absolutely logical. You would think maybe there is. Maybe there's a slight run on travel mags. But largely, I think, the crowd we attract, they're interested in magazines and they're there for the latest magazines. It's certainly slow down a little in the summer in terms of new issues and exciting developments, because people tend to be saving their surprises and their launches for late summer and autumn. So certainly now, here we are in August, it's certainly quietened down a lot, but we're still getting a lot of people in the shop buying right across the board. It's
last time I was there, I bought the latest Buffalo Zine.
Yeah.
It was a very summery issue as well.
Well, that was a summer's issue. Yeah, I mean, that's a case in point. I mean, that was
so
done
brilliant.
Up as a holiday guide, or a travel holiday catalogue. But then, for all that, there have been a couple of new magazines which have been very exciting. One was a video games magazine called A Profound Waste of Time.
Oh, wow.
Which was a slight mouthful of a name, but it's a funny name, I think, given the subject of video games. And that sold well, but that was a very kind of limited release first issue. But that certainly caused a lot of interest. We sold out. I think they've sold out now. But that's very interesting. It's interesting to see something launch into a new area like that, where for such a huge area of entertainment and business, that there isn't more about video games in print.
Absolutely. Well, you brought some magazines there, some new titles and some ones that I know. For example, let's start perhaps with the California Sunday magazine. I mean, it's just amazing. And I love the cover as well.
Yeah, well, it's kind of easy. When California Sunday magazine turns up with a new issue that there's going to be something special about it, because it always is a beautiful magazine. It's a newspaper supplement from California, of course. I just wanted to highlight this because of two reasons. One, the cover story about US women surfers, female surfers, not just surfers, but big surfers, serious, huge, taking on huge waves. But the story itself is a lovely set of photographs, but the typography with it is really intriguing, because Leo Jung, the creative director, has done this thing where, I mean, it's very simple. He's
very wavy.
He's made it wavy, which is kind of okay, fine. It's about surfing. He's done it with waves. But what was interesting, I was talking to him about it, and because you look at that and you think, oh, it's been done in some kind of really high-tech 3D rendering system on screen. Actually, what he did was he printed out the type and curled it and took photographs with his iPhone. Wow. And then I love that kind of mixture of back to craft mixed with the idea of taking a picture on an iPhone and using that to create the effect. It is a newspaper supplement, and the paper by its very nature has to be quite light and thin. And he's taken advantage of that with this one particular piece about a North Korean woman who escaped to the South. So, and the headline is on the other side. So we know the split nature of that country into the two halves. The thin paper has a large degree of see-through in it. And so the headline is split between, you see on the on one side and other side on the other, but you can read the other half of the headline through the paper. So he's sort of acknowledging the, if, I don't know if you can see so he's acknowledging the kind of weakness, but taking advantage of the slightly insubstantial nature of the paper they're printing on. And I love stuff like that.
And I think you should big it up. I don't know if you can mention this, but you're one of the few people that actually stock California Sunday Magazine.
I'm very
happy
to mention this, yes.
Yes, no,
mention. Well,
because I'm sure our listeners here in London would ask, where can I...
Well, it's one of the things we try really hard to do. I mean, obviously, we have a huge range of independent magazines, small magazines. And in fact, probably, you could, I think California Sunday is actually made by a team that is not that different to a lot of the indies. It's quite a small team. It's a small organisation. It's a small company and probably counts as an indie mag. But we also try and get this sort of specialist magazines like this that you wouldn't expect to see. And it's popular. A lot of our customers are designers or in the creative industries, and it's a great inspiration to them.
Well, let's talk now about the collaboration between The Guardian and Gauden as well. Very interesting issue of The Guardian Weekend magazine.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's another I mean, in this case, a weekly newspaper supplement, but it just struck a chord with me. Gaudam is a South London collective specialising in covering stories around women of colour. They produce an annual print magazine, but largely they're online. But what was interesting about this project was that they collaborated. A number of their contributors were already participating and contributing to the Guardian Weekend magazine. But at some point, the discussion came over around how Gaudam might take over one whole issue, and that's what they've done. There's two reasons to highlight that. One is, I think... I mean, it just is very simple. It's extraordinary when you flick through the issue, seeing every face in it is a person of colour. And that just is not something you see in print very often, not in this country anyway.
Very unusual.
And it just makes you realise, it puts it in very stark contrast to the normal issue of The Guardian Weekend, which is very white. This is a real kind of challenge to that, and is very successful in it and very exciting for it. But the other thing I think is of great interest to me is that it's the collaboration between this small kind of startup editorial voice and this huge kind of traditional mainstream publishing business. And the two of them are collaborating so overtly and explicitly is really fascinating. And I think the indies and the mainstream are becoming closer in lots of ways in terms of paying attention to each other and maybe, if not collaborating so outrightly, at least a lot of cross-pollination. I think there's more power to it. The more, the better.
Amazing. And Jeremy, I like to end on a new title. We all like a new title.
Yes, yeah.
And to be fair, that's the first time I've got my hands on it. A Dance Mag. What a beautiful title. Tell us about the format first.
It's beautiful in every sense. So the format is lovely. It's a tall, thin format. It's twice as tall as it is wide. So when the pages open up, you have a square. It is a magazine ostensibly about dance, but like a lot of great indie magazines, it takes its subject and uses it to widen the discussion above and beyond. What appealed to me about this, apart from the look and the feel and the format, was just the way it seeks to end this polarisation. The editor's letter is very powerful. It talks about trying to end the polarisation between right and left, rich and poor, light and dark, acceptance and aggression, etc. Using dance and the way that dance has balance, it brings balance to your discussion, it brings balance to your life, and it's applying that and in a wider sense. And I think it's a really healthy message that we could pay attention to more often.
Where are they from, the dancers?
From Beirut. It's actually...
It's a Lebanese.
You remember The Outpost?
Yeah.
So Ibrahim, who ran that, is the creative director on this. And then there's the... editor Yana, who's the two of them have made this magazine. And that is going back to what I was saying about profound waste of time. The other magazine that sold really well in the shop just recently has been this. We just reordered it. It's a very exciting project.
Jeremy Leslie there in conversation with Fernando. And that's all for this week's programme. Thanks to our producer, Fernando, and our editors, Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. Comments or queries are welcome, but do keep them polite. You'll find Fernando on fp@monocle.com. Do drop him a line. That's just about all we have time for. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening. I haven't forgotten. A little tune to end with. And given where we headed earlier in the show, I think we should have something from the late singer Selena. This is El Chico del Apartamento 512. Thanks for listening.